Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
Welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. So glad that you guys can join us on a Saturday morning for the number one sports talk show in the nation between the hours of 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. We got a great show for you, as always. I tell you what, it is Saturday. All is good. 2013. Have we gotten used to saying that? The year 2013 is here. We survived the end of the world. I tell you what, I was really worried about that. I mean, I saw Twinkies fall apart in 2013. I tell you what, it was just a mess. But the good thing about it is here at The Balance, we've got everything ready to go for you. And we've got a jam-packed show for you today. Let me tell you for sure. We have a jam-packed show for you today. We got Mr. Kenny Barr standing by in the wings, getting ready to join us right here in just a few moments. Going to be talking about everything racing and everything that goes fast. And, yeah, it's off-season, but we're still talking about it. And coming up at 9:30, we're going to be talking about all the college sports. Of course, we're going to talk about that big game that's going on Monday night, just a little game with Notre Dame, just like business. And coming up between 10 and 11 o'clock. Well, guys, it is that time of year. You know what? We would be talking about it anyway. But it's a lot more exciting to be talking about the NFL playoffs when the Indianapolis Colts and Andrew Luck is in. And how incredible would that be if Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck met somewhere in the playoffs? Well, there's a scenario that can happen. We're going to break that down as well. We got a very special guest with us coming in at 10 o'clock. Mr. Phil B. Wilson of the IndianapolisStar.com. He's out there in Baltimore, and he's soaking up the crab cakes and everything that goes along with the scene of Baltimore. He's going to be calling in the show here live from Baltimore, talking with us about the Indianapolis Colts. And as you guys know, it was Black Monday this past Monday. Every coach, you look at this in perspective, and we will break this down a lot more, but in perspective, you had about a quarter of all the coaches in the NFL lose their job or GMs, and there was a big shake and bake up in Philadelphia. Of course, talking about Andy Reid ending his huge 14-year tenure out there and appears to be signing a deal with the Kansas City Chiefs. We're going to be talking about that, and hopefully we're going to be talking about that with Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. So, guys, hey, I didn't lie to you. We got a jam-packed show for you. And, you know, also, we got Preston Barr going to be calling in from Kansas. We got Evan Williams from Purdue University going to be calling in as well, guys. It's Saturday, and absolutely, you don't want to go anywhere. We'll be right back right here on The Balance Radio Network. Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Hello, Kenny, are you with us?
Yeah, I'd be right here, brother.
You know what? I got it done early. Every week I forget to turn on my mic at least some point, and I just start gobbling on and talking, talk. Hey, welcome to the Pellets, I said. How's your new year? How'd it go for you? And there was nothing, and I realized that because Kenny didn't hear me say that. So I'm going to repeat it. Mr. Kenny Barr from Radio Speed Talk. So glad that you could take some time to join us today. How was your New Year, sir?
My New Year was really good, and I discovered that if you go home early, like at 11:30, there's not a single soul on the road. You don't have to worry about getting hit by a drunk amateur drinker or a cop bothering you. It's smooth sailing. Get home a little bit early before the ball drops, and works out better.
Well, I totally agree with you. You know what? I stayed right here at home. I actually had some work and stuff to do at the office, and I didn't get home until almost 9 o'clock. So by the time I had gotten home, it was just time to call it a day, call it a year, and move forward. So we move forward into 2013. What's looking up there in 2013 for the boys over at Radio Speed Talk?
Well, we're in talks with affiliates, and that's looking really good. We got some information just the other day that a couple of them want to take us on. We got to finish the negotiations there. We've got a couple new pieces of equipment getting fixed, so we'll be able to expand how we do things. And we're looking really looking forward to 2013. Talked to a new local sponsor in a restaurant, which really gets us excited because, you know, none of us are small. We all like to eat. So that's probably at the top of our list. We'll have to go visit them frequently. And, of course, we're all fired up about the dirt race down at Eldora. So.
Well, and absolutely, and we certainly want to get into that conversation here out there at Eldora, and I'm glad that you opened up that door for us as well. Let's talk about that a little bit before we get into some of our national points of racing. Of course, it's the off season, and we're getting geared up for Daytona just right around the corner up here in February. But talk with us about Eldora and what's going on out there at the Eldora racetrack.
Well, the trucks, the NASCAR trucks, are going to be there on Wednesday night before the Brickyard. They're only going to start, I think, 30 trucks because it is a half-mile high-bank dirt. First time NASCAR has been on dirt for, I don't know, three decades, maybe four. It's been a long, long time since we've raced on dirt. And there's just a major buzz in the dirt world about this. They don't have to modify the trucks much. Where the exhaust comes out has to be altered, and one other piece, and I forget what it is, something to do with the rear suspension, if memory serves me right, but the trucks are really ready to go. I've heard a lot of talk about surface preparation and Tony Stewart, how he's going to do it. because the trucks really don't have the same goodies that regular dirt cars have, so they won't have nearly the adjustments that they can tinker with and work with. And I've also heard a long discussion about what kind of drivers are really going to succeed on that, as opposed to the guys who won't. And Kenny Wallace has got an opinion, and I tend to disagree with what he said. It'll be interesting to see how this all washes out. I heard ticket sales go on today at 10 o'clock. I'm going to have to get on the Eldora website and check that out. But the place holds, I think, 23 or 24,000 people, permanent seats, and that's going to be a sellout in a great big hurry. That's going to be the biggest thing that hit the dirt world in a long, long time, and it's going to get a ton of press. It's going to be really cool, and we're going to work on our credentials. I'm calling Cliff after the show here and make sure he gets to work on it right now.
Well, absolutely. I'll tell you what, the July 24th event's going to be huge, and I'm right there with you. I mean, NASCAR will run its first dirt track race in a national series, that is, since 1970, in the Camping World Truck Series, and obviously we'll race, like, as you mentioned, Tony Stewart's Eldora Speedway. And I want to talk with you a little bit about the door that that's opening. Is that going to open up a very unique opening that you and Cliff have talked about right there on Radio Speed Talk? Is there an opening? And obviously not in 2013, but is there an opening in the near future of NASCAR coming back to dirt?
Well, after they see the success of this, I'll bet you they're going to start looking for some venues that hold more. Or make it a pay-per-view event or something, because this thing's going to be extremely successful. There's a whole world of dirt racers out there that absolutely still love racing. You know, excuse me, asphalt racing is slowly losing its steam, but dirt racing never really has. If you're going to build a racetrack now, and in the short track world, you really need to build it for dirt. But dirt doesn't get the television time that anything else does, because it's a tougher thing to broadcast. But who is it? National Speedway Directory keeps track of every racetrack in the country and where it's at and what it's made out of and how it's doing. And their inventory of racetracks every year, you'll lose a half a dozen asphalts, you'll gain about a half a dozen dirts, and the dirts all seem to be financially successful. And the asphalts, you have to have some magical production going on, and a lot of specials, and, you know, ostrich races and bowling ball throws and things of that nature, and egg carton throws and things to keep the fans there, and trailer races and that kind of nutty stuff, where the dirt racers simply go racing and run on the dirt. So if you're going to be a short track promoter, that's the way to go. It's still popular. The people that are slowly losing their discretionary income to, say, the 2% Social Security tax that just got popped onto your checks this week.
Are you serious? That actually happened?
Well, with guys like you, you're probably one of those guys that's got to worry about the 30 or 40% tax thing. You know, guys like me, I got to watch my 2%.
Yeah, you know, it's a burden being a part of the upper 1%. You know, at least one good thing is, you know, I thought I was going to dodge a bullet or whatever, you know, but I'm kidding. Of course, I'm right there with you, brother. I'm in the same boat you are. I don't make over $1 million a year. Close, but not right there. I'm knocking on the door, you know. So I do have a higher tax bracket. I really wish that was the what was the case. Well, you know, obviously we talk about NASCAR. We talk about the Dirt Track Series. Obviously, that's the Wednesday, right there before the huge event out there at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Now, my question to you, close to home, three-hour drive, and we talk about losing them out there at Lucas Oil Stadium, losing the Truck Series, that is, and the track being owned by Tony Stewart, and the Wednesday before the Indianapolis Motor Speedway huge weekend. Let me ask you this. They say nothing happens by coincidence, and this is no exception. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, you're very correct.
Okay, well, we'll just move on with that then. So let me ask you a little bit about the format. You see, lady, when they open up a door, and I'm a nice guy and I'm a gentleman, and I say, I open up the door for you, and I say, go right ahead. Well, most people just go ahead and walk on through that door, but you just decide, I'm going to stop there, right?
Well, every once in a while, you've said about all the things you said. And it's no brainer. You look at the calendar, you got the guys in town, you got I'm sure there's some trucks being built. I'm sure there's some guys like Scott Bloomquist and Billy Moyer and Steve Kinzer who are just absolute demons on dirt in their particular genres are all sniffing around the idea of going down there. I've heard anywhere from estimates of 60 to 80 potential entries for 30 or 31, I forget how many cars are going to start spots. The whole thing is going to be extremely interesting, right down from practice to qualifying to who can figure out. The track's going to be, I'll almost guarantee that it's going to be a slippery, throttle control kind of a track. They're not going to set it up to where you pitch it in there sideways and just stand on the gas. You're going to have to half to three-quarter throttle it and finesse that thing around there. And it's really going to be a neat show. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, absolutely, and I do. I'm very much looking forward to it. Obviously, we're going to continue to talk about it right here on the Balance Radio Network, and it comes together, especially being so close to Brickyard. Well, one other thing I want to talk about in the USAC news, Shane Hamill making the race car return. Obviously, we talked about back on January 26th, Shane Hamill. Coming up in January 26th, I apologize, going to do something that no one thought that he ever could do again since Hamill's accident while attempting to qualify at the USAC race in Terre Haute on October 9th in 2010 left him paralyzed, and his road to recovery has been nothing short, in my opinion, nothing short of miraculous. What I want to do is get your thoughts on that race. Obviously, that happened out there in Terre Haute, close regionally to us. And, you know, doctors initially had told Hamill that, and his family for that matter, that he had a 10% chance to live and that he probably would never walk or breathe. And I'm sure that you remember that accident as it happened and unfolded out there in Terre Haute. He wasn't even supposed to move his fingers again. He wasn't supposed to ever move his arms again. And he wasn't ever supposed to move his toes or feet again, Kenny, but he defied the odds to overcome all of that to get back into the race car. So I wanted your thoughts on that real quickly, if you have any at all, but I'm sure you do remember that race as it come together, and obviously with continued support. And it's a get back behind the wheel of a race car in a wheelchair-type situation. Oh, my God, that is the most incredible event, and it's going to happen with USAC, obviously a series that we follow very closely right here on The Balance.
Well, it's going to be interesting. I didn't hear about the accident when the accident happened, but I've read about it quite a bit afterwards, and you're right, it's nothing short of a miracle that he's where he's at health-wise. And him crawling back into a race car makes me wonder just how he's going to react once he gets up to speed or what he perceives to be up to speed. I know he had gobs and gobs and gobs of potential, but he had at the time, and it's going to sound a little bit mean, but I heard he had a huge ego at the time, and that has been destroyed with his accident. Now he's very humble and very thankful for everything that he's got, and that'll make you a much better man, and a lot of times it'll make you a better racer. But it'll, when he gets up to speed, we'll see how he reacts. If he's still calm and cool and collected and feels comfortable and the reaction times are still there, I think it's going to be one of the greatest stories in 2013. But I hope he has the wisdom to go, you know, maybe not. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. So we'll see what happens.
No, absolutely, and you know, it's an exciting story to watch as you watch it unfold, and we look at just the situation, and that just kind of brings to light the danger that IndyCar drivers put themselves, or well, say IndyCar, any car, a race car driver, puts himself under. to be that. We look at the IndyCar owner as well, you know, Sam Schmidt Motorsports. And we look at what an inspiring story it is to see Sam, you know, just here in town when he's in Indianapolis or other IndyCar races, just see him going up and down pit lane there in his wheelchair. And that was an incredible event when that happened. But to actually see a paralyzed driver get back into the race car and race a race, which obviously he's going to do out at Rockingham Speedway, is an incredible event.
Well, I'm concerned about his reaction time. I'm concerned that there's a bunch of extra mechanical stuff that can go wrong with the car, but you know, USAC is pretty picky about who they let in cars and how they're going to do it and stuff, and I'm sure they got all that stuff worked out. So I wish him all success in the world. I think it's really cool. I just hope he doesn't hurt himself or anybody else in the process.
Well, I do too, and I think that's a conversation that we can have in another show. But I'm definitely tipping my hat to him, and we're going to be following that here on The Balance. Well, we want to talk a little bit about Ryan Hunter-Reay. Obviously, we know a little bit about who he is and what he's accomplished in IndyCar, but he joins WTR lineup for the Rolex 24 out in Daytona, and obviously that's right around the corner. So let's talk a little bit about Ryan Hunter-Reay jumping into Grand Am Series car. Thoughts?
Well, I think he's done it before, and he does a pretty good job. I think he started back in, 07 or something, running with Jimmy Johnson and a couple of guys that I've never even heard of, somebody named Mark Goossens and somebody else. This is an interesting race. I've never followed it really, really close because it says 24 hours, and I got this real bad habit of sleeping. So I depend on the Speed Channel and some other people to give me all the highlights and stuff. Also reminds me of my younger days when I'm coming home late and I got the headlights on and the wipers on and I'm going as fast as I can to beat curfew. You know, that was like 24 hours Rolex in Northeast Indiana. But it's an interesting race. It checks the durability of the mechanic ability of the car. It tests the durability of the drivers. I'm kind of curious about the rules and if you have to drive a certain window or if you drive an hour and you get to feeling bad, can your son come in? Things of that nature. But It's a cool race, and a lot of big names have run in it. I think Ryan Hunter-Reay is going to do just fine. You know, he has established himself as one of the best IndyCar racers around currently, and he'll do a good job. But who's he teamed up with, Tom? Do you know?
He's in with WTR Racing. I'm not sure who exactly he's teamed up with. Actually, I do know. Stand by. I don't know. I apologize. I thought I had it right here with me. Well, one thing about it is this Rolex series, and we talked about it, obviously, when it made its appearance and debut at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway with the Grand Am Series. Obviously, that was a launching pad for the Grand Am Series, and it's a great opportunity. I thought I had the list up there, but I don't have the list of who his teammates are, but he'll be racing with WTR Racing. And Kenny, I'm the host. You're not supposed to ask me those trick questions, sir.
Well, see, you know a lot more about that kind of stuff than I do, so I thought I was going to expand upon his team with you. I opened that door, and you're supposed to go through those, you see.
He turns the tables. Well played, sir. Well played. Well played. I mean, you see, and the good thing about being the host, I can just change the subject at any time. So the Daytona 500 coming up very soon here. It's called the Great American Race, obviously, for great reason, coming up here on February 24th, 2013. Boy, NASCAR has the shortest offseason of any sport out there. So NASCAR hits the tracks again. Obviously, it's equivalent to the Indianapolis 500 for that particular series. So let me ask you something. We talk about the Daytona 500, and we're going to be talking a lot about the Daytona 500 as we move closer to February 24th, Daytona weekend. But as we look forward to that, what are some of the things and experiences that we learned from 2012 moving into 2013 NASCAR series? Obviously, we've got a new car. We've got a lot of new things happening in NASCAR at the day, and so the Daytona is certainly a good showcase for them. What are some of the things that we learned from NASCAR in 2012 going forward in 2013 with the Daytona 500? What are some of the secrets behind the door, if you will, that we need to look for?
Well, you learned that you can run a race at Daytona 500 on Monday night and still get a good television crowd. You learned that if Brad Keselowski tweets on the backstretch during a red flag when Juan Pablo decides to smash a jet dryer, the whole social media world becomes a buzz times three. We've learned that anybody can win that race. I was really pulling for Blaney in the rain. Would have been a huge upset, but have been a great victory for Tommy Baldwin Racing and the crew there, but they did get the track dry and get it finished up. We learned that you can repair a racetrack in a great big hurry with a lot of tide and a lot of hard work. Last year was a rather interesting race. This year it's going to be, even before the Daytona 500, I'm looking forward to the 10th, 11th, and 12th on speed, trying to rig a television in my office at work so I can keep an eye on that, because they're going to televise testing at Daytona live with all the new cars and stuff. So we're going to get a chance to see all the new body styles, and I've seen the breakdown of the test sessions where they're going to have, they don't have to, but they want to perform to run in pairs for a while, then they're going to try and get them to run single for a while, and then maybe in packs for a while to see how all these things shake out and work out. I don't know if the race cars are going to be in full dress as far as all their paint schemes and stuff, but you're going to be able to recognize the body styles, and when a Ford goes zooming by, you'll know it's a Ford with a quick glance. When a Chevy SS goes by, you'll know that a Chevy SS went zooming by, and then a when it goes by, you'll know the difference, and that's one of the biggest things that they were aiming for. The engineers also had a hand in shaping some of these cars and body styles. NASCAR wouldn't let them touch certain hard points on it, so they had a little bit of a challenge getting them a little more aerodynamic like they like, yet still keeping the characters of the cars the way they are. So the new body styles really got me intrigued, and I want to see how they react and how fast they go. They were setting some serious times at Charlotte earlier, and then they have another test session in Charlotte, I think, a week later. But the Daytona thing, the 10th, 11th, and 12th, is going to be televised live. And I'm almost tempted to take a couple vacation days there, but I probably shouldn't do it this early in the year.
tempting that it is, sir, right? Oh, tempting that it is. Well, we've just got a few more moments left here with you as well. Any thing that you want to cover and talk about? And obviously, you're more than welcome to stay with us through the college segment as we have your very well known son, Mr. Preston Barr, going to be joining us here as well in the college segment. So you're more than welcome to join us. But what's going on this week on Radio Speed Talk? And is there anything you'd like for us race fans to know as we move into 2013?
Well, this week on Speed Talk, we were fortunate enough to get a friend of mine named Keith Beeching in the studio. And we didn't abandon our complete format, but it turned out to be a really nice hour of just sitting around the table, sharing experiences and sharing stories, and talking about what we think is going to take to get racing advanced, at least short track racing in the future. Keith has been around racing like me ever since he was a knee-high to a grasshopper, and has owned a couple of series, traveling series around, and he's currently the race director at Winchester Speedway. Mm-hmm. And he's got some great stories and some great insight, and it's a really one of our favorite shows, I think, we decided. We listened to it, I think, Thursday, and the production's solid. We've solved a couple of little microphone issues that we thought we had. We got that cured. And it's a good show. You need to dial that up on the balance. I think it's after the Colts game Sunday, or RadioSpeedTalk.com. You're going to enjoy this show.
You're absolutely right. The Radio Speed Talk airs right here on the Balance Radio Network, exactly right after the Colts game. And what a great Colts game that it is. And I always want to encourage, and I know you guys do this on your show as well, but I encourage all race fans to get out to their perspective racetracks, dirt track series. You mentioned Winchester, but here in Indiana, we got Terre Haute, as we mentioned earlier. We've got Anderson, Winchester. There's just a lot of great dirt track and short track, and Anderson's not a dirt track, but it certainly is a great short track as well. And I know that now Radio Speed Talk or at least used to, and correct me if that's still not the case, but you guys also sponsor a late model race car driver as well. Is that still the case?
Negotiations are forthcoming. We're going to have our name on a very successful modified here in Northeast Indiana. We do know that for a fact. And we're trying to decide if we want to continue the family racers or if we're going to pull our bond just a little bit. So it could be. We could end up a lot of places. I got some things working at work. And, Tom, I'm going to interrupt you. You have a couple of listeners down in Caparis Cove, Texas. And one of them happens to be my 3-year-old grandson. So I got to go, hi, Lucas. You behave today.
Hi, Lucas. Absolutely. And Lucas, you're more than welcome to call in the show here at any time as well. Well, we got to jump in. We got to take a break and get off of here, buddy. One thing I want to ask you, though, Kenny, tomorrow the Colts or the Ravens, who comes out on top?
I think Indianapolis is riding a dream season. I have long been a preacher. I get out of the soapbox and just yell at people, but people who are inspired can do amazing things. And I think the Colts are inspired. I think that all the firings that happened Monday are partially Chuck Pagano's fault because, you know, he comes into a bad situation. He goes down with an illness. The team responds. Bruce Arians steps up to the plate and does a terrific job. And all these owners are going, huh. Maybe we need to take a different approach. Let's fire A, B, C, D, E, and F and try it all over again. I think the Colts going to pull this thing off. They're going to retire Ray Lewis. That's what they're going to do.
What a fantastic win it would be as a fan of the Indianapolis Colts, and certainly all of us people in the media are biting at the bit to see if Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck will meet in the playoffs. Well, we're going to get into that conversation a little bit later, and obviously a recap from Black Monday we're going to get into. Kenny Barr, where can people find you at on Twitter, Facebook, and stalk you anywhere else?
You can stalk me at Twitter. It's the best place to find me, Kenny Barr 52. They tell me I'm supposed to spell it now. Jeez. A-N-Y-B-A-R, the number 52. I better not give out my wife's Facebook. I'm a pirate when it comes to Facebook. I use my wife's Facebook address. That way I can sneak around and check on the kids, and they don't know it's me.
Your son's in the queue right now there, buddy.
Oh, did he call? Oh, good.
All right. Well, we got to go, Mr. Kenny Barr. Kenny Barr, Radio Speed Talk, talking with us about what's going on in the racing world. Kenny, we'll talk with you next week. And make sure you guys listen to Radio Speed Talk right here on the Balance Radio Network tomorrow. Immediately follow the Colts game. Guys, we've got to take a break. When we get back, we're going to jump right into College Saturday. Standing by in the wings is Kenny Barr's son, Mr. One Preston Barr, as well as Mr. Evan Williams calling in from Purdue University. We're going to be talking about some of the great things happening in college football. Obviously, we're not going to ignore that big game coming up right on Monday night.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
So you're not going to sports. It's a very small part of life.
Sports. March, Bart rides up in the front seat today because he's a good guy at sports.
All right, my friends. All right, welcome back to the Balance, my minions. My name is Tom Marquezel, Presidente. It is Saturday morning. I tell you what, we've got a lot of college talk in the hoops, and we had a great first segment with Mr. Kitty Barr of Radio Speed Talk. I tell you what, it is that time of year. We get right into talking about some college football. We got our panel of discussions, discussioneers, if you will, that are with us. Obviously, Mr. Evan Williams from Purdue University. How are you doing, Evan? Are you with us?
Well, I'm here, Tom. I'm struggling to stay awake. I'm at home right now, so I'm about an hour behind you guys. So,
well,
I
can't
be dozing off, but I'll try to stay up.
We'll try to wake you up. We'll send you a gentle vibrate text. How's that? If you go down on us, man down. Also joining us is Mr. Preston Barr from Kansas State University. Now, Preston, you're down in Atlanta. Do I understand that correctly? Hello, Preston.
Uh oh, you lost him.
Oh, maybe I did. I don't. I'm not sure. But also, we've got a brand new guest in our discussion. Mr. Gene Walker. Gene, how you doing, sir?
Good. How you doing today?
I'm doing well.
I am fantastic.
I'm now, very well today.
Do we have Preston on with us? Hello?
Oh, I'll text him seriously.
See where he's at. All right, there. We got Kitty back. Okay, guys, we're good. We're good. You know, the beauty of live radio, sometimes, you know, they just work in sync as they're supposed to work, and sometimes they're not supposed to happen the way. So we're going to start with you. Mr. Jimmy, the intern, cannot join us today. So, Evan, we're going to have you hold the helm down for us for college talk. So we want to talk a little bit about Big Ten. And obviously, we want to talk about the Big Ten appearances in the bowl games, and we'll get into Gene's thoughts as well. But we look at what's happened in the bowl game series with the Big Ten. What are your thoughts? Obviously, we want to talk about Purdue. What the heck, dude? Oklahoma, come on, man! You could have at least scored a few points. And I know you're going to say, "Oh, it's everybody else's fault. Penn State screwed us over. It was all that," but really, it was not boiler up. It was more boiler down, let's go home, we got us a new coach, and we're done with the season. We didn't even want to come to the Toilet Bowl anyway. Evan?
Well, there's a lot that went into Purdue's poor performance. You know, I think it's always going to be tough when you lose your head coach and have an interim head coach like that. And really, Purdue had no business being in that bowl game. You know, they were a 6-6 team. They should have been back in Detroit at the Little Caesars Bowl. But because of postseason bans to Ohio State and Penn State, they got a higher bowl. And they were playing a much better Oklahoma State team. I mean, I really wasn't too confident going into the game. Oklahoma State, despite their record, is a very high-powered offense team. And Purdue's defense has struggled a lot this year. Just a lot of bad combinations. Purdue did not perform as well as they should have. They just didn't look prepared to play. And we saw the result on the field. But I think, you know, everyone's ready and, you know, looking forward to Coach Hazel and getting his staff together and then start work for next year.
Well, let's move on down to our next person on the panel, which is brand new to the Balance, first-time guest. So we certainly want to give you a little bit of a time to introduce yourself, who you are, and obviously you're no stranger to sports, Mr. Gene Walker. It is a pleasure and, must I say, a most esteemed honor, sir, to have you a part of the Balance, sir.
Well, very happy to be here, and thank you for being honored. I don't know if that's necessary.
Well, tell us about Purdue's performance, and obviously what we're talking about right now is Big Ten, the Big Ten league, the Big Ten inside the bowl appearances this year, and obviously made a pretty good appearance when you look at Nebraska, you look at Wisconsin, and you look at Purdue and some of the other big teams that made bowl appearances, Michigan State. What are your thoughts about the Big Ten appearances this year, and really overall the Big Ten's football performance overall all year long?
Well, there's really no way to spin this into something positive. It's awful. I mean, if you're gonna take any stock in these bowl games, which I take very little in anymore, for multiple reasons, and you go on that hand, then once again, this conference has not shown up. Come time to do it, if it hadn't been for Northwestern finally deciding to win a game in a bowl game, and Michigan State as well pulling out one, this was a dismal lot. I remember last year when the Big Ten went 0-5 on the New Year's Day. I was just hoping, obviously it started strong, hopefully it would end strong. It didn't happen this year. But I got to tell you, bowl games, whether they win or whether they lose, a lot of these games, I still have been one of those jaded guys along the way that have thought that it's never been a true representation of what any of these teams can do anyway. I mean, it's the most ludicrous thing to think that if you were to take the same example, apply college football to basketball, and say, okay, since there's really no playoff, at least at this point, there will be soon, a short one, then at the end of the basketball season, you get there, and on Saturday, the NCAA tournament in basketball, we've whittled it down to two teams. And then we go to those two teams and say, congratulations, come Monday, you're going to play in the championship. Oh, by the way, that Monday is next spring. So we're going to wait 30 or 40 days for you to play the significant game. If we did that in the NCAA tournament, you'd say nobody would go for that. You'd say that's out of control. You'd say that's stupid. That's completely ridiculous. But yet in football, we do. And if you only go back to compare it to pro football, where Peyton Manning, when he was a Colt a few years back, they played a quarter against Seattle. They played a series against the Cardinals. They had a week off for the bye week, and they played the Pittsburgh Steelers. And they looked awful. They just looked awful. And they still almost pulled the game out at the end somehow. And people were talking even then about, you know, rust and about people not having the timing of routes together, not having this and that together. And that was pro football players who were doing this year-round at a high level, only 2 or 3 weeks involved. So I'm just not as excited about the bowls. I think they've lost their meaning pretty much because there's so many of them. And then on top of it, we're not winning them. And it didn't hurt that Bielema leaves Wisconsin when they finally hit stride, mm-hmm. Try to one up it to go to the SEC to be what the fourth or fifth shoe down there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's depressing to say the least. And the whole thing made me a little ill this year. And of course, my Hawkeyes didn't even make a bowl, didn't even make one of these things after beating Michigan State and Minnesota to start the year before the injuries hit them. So I don't have anything, you know, good to report on that end. I was hoping that somebody would come through and win a game. I agree with you, last guy, too. Purdue had no business even being in that game at all, and it's really weird. I thought the coaching job this year that was done to Penn State was marvelous. I think that they've gone positive. What O'Brien did in Happy Valley was the most amazing thing in the Big Ten season for me, because I don't even know why he took the job to begin with, a year removed, and unlike most college coaches, even though there's a $19 million buyout, he stayed with what he said. The commitment, the canned speech, the corporate BS, he meant it all, actually, this time. He didn't take the next pro job that came. He's going to stay despite the fact they're not going to a bowl next year. I think what he did in Penn State is what we should be talking about.
Oh, absolutely, and I wish that we had time to really get into the Penn State season as well. Fantastic. But we look at some of – you know what? Here's the situation. You know, every year I preach this that the NCAA in football should have a playoff system much like they do in basketball. Doesn't have to be as many teams. Doesn't have to be as many brackets. And you can still name those playoff games, bowl games, if you need to name it for sponsorship and money purposes. But then I look at situations like Notre Dame. And then I look at some of my bold predictions going into the BCS bowl games. And I want to get you guys' thoughts on this. We'll start with you, Evan. If you were to sit back a couple of weeks ago and make a bold prediction, in the BCS bowl games, and you were to look at the Orange Bowl, number 12 Florida State against number 15 Northern Illinois, who? Florida State, we know exactly who the Gators are. Now we know exactly who the Gators are. Evan?
Looking back, I still would have picked Florida State to win that game. You know, Northern Illinois, they got a big break there with how, you know, all the BCS worked out this year. They were the superior talent, and they showed it in that game.
Well, let me ask you this, Gene. Florida State, do we know who Florida State really is, or was this a perfect example as to why we should have a playoff system in the BCS or NCAA? Obviously, if we have a playoff system, the BCS would go away. But do you think that this plays to a perfect example as to why we should have a playoff system when you look at Northern Illinois and that game against Florida State?
Well, if you're going to make the argument that Northern Illinois might have had a chance at the end of the year, which I don't know how many people would have made that argument, Northern Illinois actually gave them a game for about three quarters before the Seminoles eventually pulled away and made it around what we thought it would be. So I'm not, again, I don't know. Time off, I don't know. Florida State, I can't believe, went into that game taking the Huskies very serious, and why would they? The Huskies started out the year losing to Iowa. They did not have a very good start. They somehow ended up rebounding before the end, and I'm wondering just how much of an effort Florida State came out with. And I've wondered about the motivation of some of these teams, such as Kansas State the other night against Oregon once they fell down a little bit. You know, I've always kind of questioned the mindset of both teams coming in, and do both end up on the par of swinging for the fence against each other? And every now and then you do see it. Every now and then we get a game like that. But it seems to be rare.
Well, and I tell you what, that was a great game, and we look at that. So let's talk about, obviously, there was a lot of bowl games to get into, and obviously that's one of the highlights, one of the highlight-type situations. But obviously the SEC made the bowl system. Look at, so when we look at who got to the national championship. And by all rights, Notre Dame should have been in the national championship. But Alabama, in my opinion, maybe not. They lost one. They're in the national championship. So it still goes to play that some teams can go undefeated and never get to the national championship, and some teams can actually lose and get to the national championship. So we break that down, Evan. We look at the strength of schedule, and we look at Notre Dame's big national championship game coming up on Monday. Do they deserve to be a national champion?
I think this year Notre Dame has earned it. They do have a tough schedule for the most part. And, they really showed it. They beat the teams that everyone said they weren't going to beat this year. They played great. Their defense was outstanding. They had Monte Teo, one of the best players in the country. I do think they deserve to be there this year. They went undefeated, and then they played great all year. So I do believe that they should be there.
Well, absolutely, and I'm certainly one of those guys that love to watch Notre Dame. Obviously, I'm a big IU fan, and all I want to know is, Evan, since Purdue didn't belong there in the first place, why didn't just Purdue say, hey, IU, come and play in our place? You couldn't have done any worse.
Well, Purdue did win the old open bucket game, so I don't know if they'd be ready to give that up.
Oh, my goodness. That was an incredible game. Obviously, I was at that game, too. The old Oaken Bucket still maintains in Boiler Nation. But just immediately right after that, there was no hope for Purdue. Should Purdue have hung on to hope for just through that bowl game? Because if we gotta judge the new coach on the bowl game appearance against Oklahoma State, I guess I don't know. I'm not exactly convinced.
I think they did need to get rid of hope as soon as they did, because it really, sped up the process of finding their next coach. And I think if they would have kept hope for the bowl game, they probably wouldn't have gotten Daryl Hazel. And, I think Boiler Nation's pretty satisfied with his hire and, seems to get the players motivated, get the program, a little re-energized. So I think removing hope after that bucket game was the right decision.
Well, Gene, that brings me to the next question with you as well. When we look at all the different types of coaching changes and all the various different opportunities, obviously here regionally we look at Coach Hope being one of the most notarized dismissals. And what are your thoughts? And what are your thoughts about that, especially when you look at where Notre Dame ended up at? Obviously, Coach at Notre Dame is secure. But had they not got there, would his job still be secure? Do you look at the program, the schedule, or the team determining on whether or not you keep your coach, or is it all about wins and losses? Gene?
Well, I have to think that in South Bend, the timer was on Kelly if they had a mediocre season. And you don't have to look any farther than just based on how it went down with Ty, how it went down with Charlie Weiss, though some would argue Weiss got an extra year by Dame standards. So I think Kelly was kind of facing an ominous cloud if he doesn't get through this one, at least with a pretty solid record. Now, if he'd done that, I don't think they would have done anything more than they're going to do now, which is just sing his praises, I don't know, as loudly. Time, championships buy you time. Winning them certainly does in college sports, obviously, and the fact that they're there right now, he has a window now as a result of this season. That's no question about it.
Well, absolutely. Well, let's talk about Notre Dame real quickly here. Gene, what are your thoughts on the Notre Dame big national championship game coming up here on Monday? Does Notre Dame get a national championship finally?
Well, I think, first of all, what I would want to look at is, really dissecting the opponent and what they had done this year. I would start with that because I already, we know a lot about Dame. We know a lot about their front seven. We know a lot about the fact that this is a football team that can play defense. And so when you have that ability to do that, a mobile quarterback, which we know Alabama struggles with a mobile quarterback, then we look into Alabama's season. And at first glance, you might not want to look too deep because you're thinking SEC and the way they handled Michigan right off the bat kind of seals the deal. But upon further examination, you realize that Alabama's schedule wasn't really all that difficult this year. And I'll just read the names to you right now and see what you think. In a 5-week stretch, they had Western Kentucky. They had Arkansas, though normally good, was awful this year. Florida Atlantic, Ole Miss, and a Missouri team that certainly hasn't adjusted to a new conference. That's 5 weeks. Tennessee has fallen off. They're better than they had been, but they're not very good. If you skip over a couple ranked teams, which I will give them LSU, obviously, at A&M, which they lost, they turn around and played Carolina, Western Carolina, and they played Auburn, who was absolutely awful this year as well. A lot of people look at the SEC and just sort of immediately, it's like the Wizard of Oz. They go right for that big, huge head yelling at them on the screen while somebody's yelling, don't look behind the curtain at the man. And that's how you have to look at the SEC. The SEC top to bottom is not very good. And it hasn't been very good for a long time. Nobody wants to talk about that because the tippy top two or three teams are always really good. And when they keep winning national championships, it's hard to deny that there's obviously a lot of talent down there. I contend that if Marcus Lattimore doesn't get hurt in South Carolina, we're not talking about Georgia or Alabama, but that didn't happen. So With Florida doing a little better this year, and then obviously embarrassing themselves in their bowl game against Louisville, I think right now the Crimson Tide have the best offensive line. That's true, and they run the ball. So how many yards does the Crimson Tide run the ball for? How much time of possession do they get? Do they get two-thirds of the time of possession in this game? Do they get 150 to 180 yards on the ground, plus maybe short passes to the flat area and over the second level within 10 yards line of scrimmage to kind of keep it moving? If that's the case, then maybe they win this football game. But I don't know why Notre Dame is nearly a 10-point underdog. I don't understand it at all. And I'm not saying that Notre Dame's schedule top to bottom was killer either. Notre Dame has always played a pretty tough schedule. I agree with your other panelists here that they definitely have played some tough teams in the past. But if you were to really break their schedule down too, nobody's – I mean, Purdue, yeah, Miami this year was bad. BYU, Pittsburgh, who almost beat them. I don't think Notre Dame didn't get any breaks in this. I mean, Notre Dame is only here really for three reasons. They had a great season. No question. Much improved. They also had a huge break against Stanford. Kid did score. I didn't see anything that stopped him from scoring that touchdown. It looked like his body was on top of bodies, but they didn't give it to him. And if you'll recall against Pittsburgh, in a game that I have to give the Irish a lot of credit for coming back and pulling out, there were two Manti Te'os on the field during a field goal.
Uh-huh.
As I recall, there were two fives out there. If that
right.
had been caught, that's a 15-yard penalty, and they redo the kick. And then maybe we're not even having this conversation. Which goes back to, again, maybe your point. Why are some teams able to win or lose a game and still make it, while other teams would have to go undefeated to make it? And this is the prime example. The SEC has brought up so much credit, and so much credit in the bank, if you will, with all the championships that have been won, despite the fact that two-thirds of the conference isn't good, that they are that team now. They didn't drop very far mm-hmm. when Mansell and them blew them up in Alabama. And, had Georgia won that game, well, we'd be talking about them. But they didn't fall very far. I wonder if other teams would have fallen only two or three spots, too. I doubt it.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And we finally found our missing prodigal son, Mr. Preston Barr from out at Kansas State University, I believe is calling us from Atlanta. And if he blames it on the time zone, I'm going to say you're crazy because Atlanta's on the exact same time as we are. Preston, are you joining us?
It's the time zone.
It ain't the time zones, brother. It's the college zone. We got Evan on this as well, and Evan's like, hey, at least he was able to admit I might be falling asleep. I don't know, Evan. Are you still awake?
Yeah, Tom, I'm hanging on.
I was gonna say. Well, we're talking some national football championship. Obviously, we want to get into some college hoops here in just a second. And Preston, we know you're a big Kansas Jayhawk guy. You're out there in Jayhawk Nation. Let me ask you this: what's going on down in Hotlanta? Whenever you hear Atlanta, you always got to say Hotlanta because it makes you cool to say Hotlanta. So, what's going on down there in Hotlanta, sir?
Well, they have the NFL team with the best record, probably the least talked about team, with one of the least talked about quarterbacks, the underhyped team. I think Atlanta has a great chance to win it all this year, and so does everyone that's around here. They're all very excited. However, I think there are teams that are getting hotter at the right time, though Hotlanta is playing well. Everyone's really excited that their team is got a chance and got some home field advantage in a bye. So, yeah, everyone's excited down here.
Well, we want to get around our panel one more time for one more question because then we got to get into some huge NFL talk. And calling us from Baltimore here in just a few moments will be Philip B. Wilson of the Indianapolis Star. He's going to talk with us about the position that the Indianapolis Colts have found themselves in. And hallelujah, thank you, Jesus, they are there. But we're going to move around the panel discussion here, and I'm just going to ask one simple question. You guys tell me true or false and give your reason for saying that. We got to kind of keep it limited as we got to get into our next break and get to Phil B. Wilson here in just a moment. But real quickly, Evan, true or false, Louisville wins the national title in the hoops?
This is a tough question. I'm going to go false, though. I'm just not too confident in some of their play lately. And, you know, they've had a couple injuries, and we'll see how they hold up throughout the season.
All right, real quickly, Gene, because we got to get into a break. Does Louisville win a championship in college hoops this year?
I think it's false. I don't think that their interior play is going to get them through, though I do think they're probably going to end up in the later rounds of the tournament.
All right, real quickly, Preston, and I know you're going to tell me different, but does Louisville win a national championship this year?
False, because they also don't have interior play, not enough depth, and I don't know that they'll last with injuries. So completely agree.
Well, there you go, guys, and I honestly think they're going to win it, and we'll get into all of that on a different discussion at a different time, because unfortunately, we have gotten to the point we've got to take a break. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to get Elizabeth the Greek's picks, and then standing by in the wings with us is Mr. Phil Wilson. So, guys, those that can stay, stay. Those that have to jump off, I totally understand, and hopefully we can get Phil Wilson on here in just a moment. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you're my role model.
It's time for
Remarkable.
Elizabeth the
Greek. Those words, they have power.
Well, Elizabeth, it has been a long Christmas break. You did a live show for one of your affiliates, but back to business. We've got three college games left, and the big one that you're really waiting on is Monday
night. That would be Notre Dame.
That is right. That would be Notre Dame. But to remind people what you picked on Saturday, you are going in the BBVA Compass Bowl. You picked Ole Miss over Pittsburgh. You have on GoDaddy.com Bowl on Sunday, Arkansas State over Kent State. And on Monday, in the Discover BCS National Championship game, against Alabama, you picked
Notre Dame.
That's right, Notre Dame. Now let's get on to the NFL playoffs, which start this week on Saturday, 4:30 game. In the AFC, do you go with the Cincinnati Bengals or the Houston Texans?
Houston Texans! Yay!
The Houston Texans. Moving on to the NFC in an 8 o'clock game, do you go with the Minnesota Vikings?
Minnesota Vikings.
Oh, you're going to choose them this week. Or the Green Bay Packers. Last week you chose the Packers. Oh, by the way, to remind everybody, you only went 4-1 last week. Your only one that he missed, you picked the Packers, but Minnesota beat them. So you're picking Minnesota to beat them again this week, 2 weeks in a row, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so you're going with the Minnesota Vikings. And moving on to Sunday in the AFC at 1 o'clock, we have the Indianapolis Colts or the
Baltimore Colts.
Wow, you're going to go with the Indianapolis Colts before I even say the Baltimore Ravens. Ray Lewis's last game is what you're saying then, if the Colts win. And finally, Sunday, 4:30, NFC, the Seattle Seahawks or the Washington Redskins.
Washington Redskins.
The Washington Redskins. So on Sunday, you're guaranteeing the two rookie quarterbacks that got drafted 1 and 2 are going to win their playoff games.
Yep.
All right. Who picked those?
Elizabeth the Greek. But I'm going to like me on Facebook, facebook.com/ElizabethTheGreek.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan. The Fan Revolution. IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Here we go.
Blue 20! Blue 20!
Football. Catch the fever.
The sport of kings.
And now let's talk some football.
Welcome back to hour number two, the final hour of today's episode of The Balance. And that's right, my name is Tom Marquisel, Presidente, as always, leading you and leading the charge into the knowledge of sports that only I can give you. And we have, as always, our panel of discussion airs, our expert panels. And I tell you what, one of the biggest experts that we have on the Indianapolis Colts is joining us now, live from Baltimore, Maryland. There's a little game going on out there that we like to call the wild card playoff. The Indianapolis Colts and the Baltimore Ravens. Mr. Phil B. Wilson of IndyStar.com. Phil, as always, it's great to have you on the show with us, and you're a great friend of the show. What I want to know, have you packed up as many crab cakes as you can and your little fanny purse that you carry around to bring back here to us guys here in Indianapolis?
Starting to smell, actually. See, they don't keep from Wednesday after I touch down in the morning. Nobody told me that. I mean, I thought you just put them in a little bag and, you know, now I got to look for a refrigerator or an ice block or something. And I don't know. But, yeah, I've had some crab cakes here, and it's been a lot of work for 3 days. I'm looking forward to the game, actually. Let's get to playing some football.
Well, all I want to know is if they give you crab cakes inside of the media center and the buffet that all the media guys get to take advantage of, tweet us a picture and make our mouth drool. But one thing that we hope is not on ice is the Indianapolis Colts. Who'd have ever thunked it, Mr. Phil B. Wilson, when we talked earlier on in the year about a little known fellow that nobody really knew much about, Andrew Luck? I'm kidding, of course. But did we really think that the season would turn out like this? I know you've been asked this a million times, but so many storylines, so much to tell. Indianapolis Colts, Baltimore Ravens in the playoffs. Hallelujah. Phil, what are your thoughts?
Well, no, 8-8 was the best scenario for the Colts, I thought. So I predicted 6-10. I thought 8-8 if the rookies played really, really well. Now, you look at some games that they've won. You know what? They're 9-1 in one possession games. Andrew has been resilient and taken a pounding, and he keeps going. He's had 7 game winning drives. Doesn't surprise me he set passing records and stuff because Bruce Arians is going to have him throw the ball. I think the most surprised is he's taken 40 sacks. He's gotten hit a lot more than that. And his numbers have declined a little bit in the second half of the season, but if the game's close in the fourth quarter, you have a feeling this kid will pull it out for you. So it's been a lot of fun.
Well, we're gonna allow our expert panel discussion people to ask you some very important questions. So we're gonna start with Mr. Preston Barr, who's actually in Hotlanta, but goes to Kansas State University, who's joining us. Preston, any questions for Mr. Phil Wilson on the Indianapolis Colts, not the Atlanta Falcons?
I would quickly like to give a shout-out to my two favorite Colts fans. We're actually in Texas right now, Lucas and Hadley, my niece and nephew. I think my father would say the same. But my question is, Is Ray Lewis going to play out of his mind well this game?
Oh, I don't know. I that was a big deal. You know, I got here and I got to the complex right after the press conference, and everybody scrambled to their laptops. It's a headline. It's a big deal. Ray Lewis is a legendary player here. I don't put a lot of stock into, well, this is my last postseason, and that's going to fire up everybody else or even him. It's kind of like that nice little dance that he does before every game when he, you know, jumps around the end zone like a cattle prod stuck up his patootie, and everybody thinks, oh, wow, man, I'm ready. I mean, it's cool. It's cool to get fans fired up, but after you yell and after you scream and after you do all this stuff beforehand, the ball gets kicked off, and you got to settle into what you're supposed to do and how you play, how you react, who makes mistakes, who doesn't. I think it comes down to who plays the best game wins, and I don't know that, you know, Ray Lewis saying this is it for me is going to motivate the Ravens even more. If that's what it took, you know, you have to wonder about the status of this team, whether it's as fragile as I think it is. And the Ravens lost 4 or 5 coming in, so without him. I think they're better with him, obviously, and I expect him to blitz a lot and try and get in Andrew Luck's face. But I don't think it'll be because, well, I announced it's my last trip or my last ride, and oh, everybody, they don't want to win for themselves, they want to win for Ray. No, I don't buy that.
All right, so we move on to Mr. Gene Walker. Gene, who's joining us from up in northern Indiana and fresh back to Indiana from Iowa. So talk with us a little bit, Gene, and do you have any questions for Phil, obviously calling us from Baltimore, covering the big game between the Colts and the Ravens?
Well, Phil, we know one thing about emotion and about people who suffer loss, or in this case, almost loss, unfortunately, in Chuck Pagano. Do you think there's any going to be any kind of maybe negative residual or carry-on from the fact that they had such an emotional last week at Lucas Oil? Is there any drain on them in any way, do you think, coming into this game?
Well, I guess you could worry about that. And you think about how they came back from a big deficit and beat Green Bay and had a real emotional game. And if I'm not mistaken, they crash landed with a thud the next week in New York. I guess I wouldn't rule it out, but here's the thing about the playoffs. Everything ratchets up like that much more in terms of intensity, in terms of focus, in terms of, you know, guys get into a routine all during the regular season. Well, the Colts have some guys in the roster that have never been to the playoffs. I'm not just talking about rookies. I'm talking about Vontae Davis, for example. And they're asking, hey, what's the playoffs like? And, well, it's the way the regular season is times 10, because it's like you're playing for your life. You're playing for a paycheck another week. You're playing not to let it end. It's like, you know, regular season, well, I got an ache or a pain, I might sit down. So playoffs, everybody plays. And then with the Colts being so young and a lot of those guys not experiencing the playoffs before, I think they're going to be so focused on just wanting to stay within themselves, do what they're told, you know, not try and overextend or do too much, just play the game. Ironically, I don't think that the emotion and the situation with Pagano last week will factor in, just because this is such a new experience to a lot of those guys. That's my biggest fear. You know, I don't think it'll happen, because I think Chuck Pagano is a great motivator, and I think great at organizing his team and having them focused. But I'm fearful that with all so many young guys that they'll come out and they'll crack a bit, or they'll make mistakes, or they'll press. And the Ravens, for all their faults and flaws, they're very seasoned. They've got so many guys who've been here and done that. And so that's my biggest concern, is that the Colts, not they come out flat from a lack of emotion from the previous week, but that there's so many guys who aren't used to this. And, you know, they're going to hear a lot about their mothers and their fathers and maybe other people they didn't know they had connected to. And Baltimore Ravens fans will be nasty, and it'll be hostile. So they're going to have to come in with their helmets tight on their heads and you know, block a lot of stuff out and play hard, tough football, or bulwark, kick their butts.
Well, and absolutely, this is going to be a great game. And I honestly, you know, we look at the times that Indianapolis Colts have beat the Baltimore Ravens in the playoffs, Super Bowl bound. Not quite ready to say that yet. We'll get into that in just a moment. But Evan Williams from up in, well, LaPorte right now, but our panelist from Purdue University, Boilermakers, he's obviously hugely disappointed from the loss from Purdue, Phil Wilson. He says, and maybe you could give some insight on this for him as well, he says Purdue should have never been there in the first place, so he's not really that worked up about it. But Evan Williams, any questions for Phil B. Wilson about the Colts and the Ravens, or if you want to throw something in about Purdue, feel free. Evan?
That's a standard comment. I guess maybe he
warned us at the very beginning of the thing that he might fall asleep. I don't know. He said
That's Purdue football, dead air right there.
we just move on. Evan, are you with us? I don't know. I think we've lost Evan, but that's okay. We just continue on. My question to you is, I want you to break down a scenario. And yes, we live in Willy Wonka land where we want that big, big chocolate bar. But let's talk about this. I know whether or not you're admitting it to us or not. I know Dockage is. I know everybody in the media is actually biting at the bits on local media to see Luck and Manning go together in the playoffs. Can you run that scenario by us? Is it possible? And also, is it even remotely possible that it'll happen at Lucas Oil?
No, it can't happen at Lucas Oil. Denver's the number one seed, so if it happens, it'll happen the next round. You would need the Colts to win and the Bengals to lose. Pretty simple. The Bengals are a sixth seed, and if they knocked off Houston in Houston, they would go to Denver. And the Colts would go to New England if they won. But the Texans are favored, and if Houston takes care of business and beats Cincinnati and the Colts beat the Ravens, then we're going to have the matchup that everybody's been talking about for about half a season, imagining what it'd be like, Andrew Luck versus Peyton Manning versus his old team. And it'll be in the Mile High City out there in the rarefied air. Now, if we don't get that matchup, if it doesn't materialize, folks, just wait till next year, because Peyton Manning and Denver Broncos are scheduled to come back to Lucas Oil Stadium in the regular season. And if I know the NFL, they'll have that in a primetime matchup probably very early in the season, because they don't want to risk either one of those guys getting hurt. They want to get the ratings.
Well, hallelujah. I'm all for it. You know, we have nothing to complain about as Colts fans on whether or not we've had a good season or a bad season. Andrew Luck, hats off. Now, we're going to move on around here again. One more question, because I know that you're very limited on time because you have to get back to that crab cake buffet. But, Gene, another question for Phil B. Wilson regarding the Indianapolis Colts and the Baltimore Ravens or the playoffs.
Kind of looking at it from the other side, Phil, why do you think, has there been a key or a couple keys as to why the Ravens over the years haven't been more successful, considering Flacco has been there right off the bat and they've generally had obviously a stout defense and a pretty good running game?
Yeah, you'd think that all the parts are in place, and I think last year they had their best shot. You know, a drop touchdown pass in the final minute or so at New England. They catch that touchdown pass, they'd probably go. They still missed a field goal that would have tied it, if I remember correctly. I mean, they were right there. They were that close. And Flacco actually played well in that game, which, you know, here's the big problem with what's happened in the past with these guys. Flacco hasn't always played great. They've relied on their defense. They've tried to rely on Ray Rice. I sometimes think they forget about Ray Rice. I think Ray Rice doesn't get used enough. But this year has been, at least in the last month or so, it's been a little bit of a reversal. You know, the Ravens' defense hasn't been as good. Some guys have been hurt. Ray Lewis, Terrell Suggs, Haloti Ngata's battling some right now. I think a knee or an ankle. And so they haven't been the same. And on defense, and the offense has been expected to pick up more. And the problem is the offense scoring 24 points a game, it hasn't been enough. And so they panicked in early December. They fired Cam Cameron. They promote Jim Caldwell, the former Colts head coach, to offensive coordinator, in a move that really didn't make sense. I scratch my head over it now because the offense was scoring points. It's just the defense wasn't stopping people like it used to. So I'll be interested to see if that trend plays out. Flacco's numbers in the playoffs are not good. They're actually very pedestrian. There's talk here about, well, if he doesn't do anything in this playoffs, maybe they move on to their quarterback, or they're questioning whether he's their franchise quarterback. So I'll be real interested to see how he plays, because as we've seen so often in the past, if your quarterback plays well, you're probably going to win.
All right, well, let's move around the clock here. Also, Kenny, we didn't want to leave you out. I didn't know if you were just listening or hanging out, or if you had a question. Kenny, do you have any questions for Phil B. Wilson on the Indianapolis Colts?
Yeah, I was hanging out and listening both, and I was thinking about some stuff. I know this isn't the first rodeo that Indianapolis and Baltimore have played together, but I can't help but sit here and think, can you feel or do you know of any animosity that the Baltimore fans may have toward the Colts, since the disappearance at midnight many years ago, or is that a long-gone forgiven thing now?
Well, I got a story on the front page of the Star, or a sports page, or no, I think it's the front page of the paper today, and they ran it on USA Today's website. I talked to a lot of people here in Baltimore. I talked to Johnny Unitas Jr., talked to Lenny Moore, Stan White, former players. I talked to a guy who wrote a book about Baltimore's love affair with the old Colts. In a quick synopsis, they've moved on, most of them. You're always going to have some people that want to probably bash a beer bottle upside your head if you're wearing the wrong jersey, but you can get that in Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and New England, too. They have moved on for the most part, but they're not going to forgive Robert Irsay for moving the team, even though Robert's been dead since 97. And they're not going to forget that the Baltimore Colts were once theirs. To ask them to forget would be like to ask them that never happened. So it hurts some of these guys to see that horseshoe helmet come into the stadium. It bothers them. It stirs them. But they are fully in support of the Ravens. I think any time you mention the controversy or the past history, I think Indianapolis people or Colts fans there now say, oh, get over it, stop whining. Well, yeah, you say that, but there was a deep history here, and I've really begun to appreciate it more after 3 days here. The Baltimore Colts franchise came from the Dallas Texans. The franchise did nothing in 1 year and ended up playing its final games in Hershey, Pennsylvania. So it was a franchise nobody wanted. Baltimore was nothing. They were a whistle stop between D.C. and New York City. So the city that nobody cared about and the team nobody wanted got together. They formed this bond. And 5 years later, in 1958, they win a game at Yankee Stadium against the New York Giants. It's called the greatest game ever played for time, TV. And it really put the NFL on the map. And it's the first time Baltimore really had a sense of identity. So I appreciate the history of the Baltimore Colts. Yes, you're going to have some animosity from some fans. I looked at a picture and I put it on Twitter. Took a picture of a casket in the corner of a Mexican restaurant with a Robert Irsay likeness head at the top of it, basically calling him a liar. So some feelings will never die, but I think for the most part, people here have moved on.
Go ahead.
Do you think that there's enough people who are still carrying the torch for the old Colts? Would that make a difference on the 12th man and the fans just making a ton of noise there?
You mean for the Ravens? Because I don't think there's going to be a lot of Baltimore Colts fans, or excuse me, Indianapolis Colts fans in the building. I could be wrong, but this is a tough place. This will be a tough place. I mean, you're going to get treated harshly. That's one of my jobs tomorrow. I got to go in the tailgate lots and talk to Colts fans and how they're treated. And I expect them to be treated harshly and rudely. That's the way it is. And Baltimore's a gritty little town. And if they got an angle on you, if they want to, they want to let you have it, you're going to hear it. And so I don't know how many fans will be here. I'm sure there'll be some. And you know what? God love them. You know, you admire the Colts fans that will make the road trip and come into the belly of the beast. I don't know of another stadium in this league that would treat Colts fans, you know, more harshly or at least with more purpose because of that history. So I hats off to anybody who wants to brave the waters here and venture into the, like I said, the belly of the beast.
All right, Preston, one last question for Phil Wilson.
I think we both know that the quarterbacks are probably the most important people to show up today. But who's the second most important person to show up on each team?
No, that's a great question. I probably am going to say Ray Rice for the Ravens, even though Ray Lewis would be an obvious pick. I think Ray Rice because I really think that the Ravens, if they pound the ball away enough with Ray Rice and they throw the ball out to him the flat enough and he gets a lot of yards, I think they control the time of possession. I think they wear the Colts defense down. I think they can finish their drives better by establishing him. It opens up things for Flacco. On the other side, I got to think it's got to be Dwight Freeney or Robert Mathis. I know you asked for one, but I'm going to say both of them because they got to have a pass rush. They have to get to Flacco. Flacco makes mistakes. He's been known to make some bonehead throws if you get in his face. He's human. He's a quarterback. Even the best ones make mistakes when pressured. So if Mathis and or Freeney do not get to him and hurry his inner clock to where he throws quicker and presses, then he'll be able to sit back there all day and pick and choose. He's got Torrey Smith and Anquan Boldin, some guys who can make big plays for him. So I'm going to say those two sides there.
Well, we're joined now by Phil B. Wilson, the one, the only Phil Wilson of IndyStar.com, beat writer for the Indianapolis Colts. Now, I got a couple of questions for you, and we're going to wrap it up. I know you got to get going, and I appreciate you taking a very busy time to call us from Baltimore. But here's the thing, Phil. Is Dwight Freeney as important to the Indianapolis Colts as Ray Lewis is to the Baltimore Ravens? And at the end of the day, which one of those guys live to play one more game in their career?
Well, I tend to think Ray Lewis is probably more important because he's a middle backer and he makes more tackles and he blitzes and he does a little bit more. Freeney has been kind of quiet and non-existent for most of this year. He's had a sack in each of the last three games to bump his season total to 5. He had to fight a high ankle sprain all year, not to try to make excuses for him. So he played hurt for 10, 11 games this year. But I give the edge to Lewis because he's their emotional leader. He's their the guy that keeps them focused and fired up on the field. And he does make a lot of plays. If the guys up front do their job, Ray Lewis is free to roam and smack people. And he can do that. So I'd say Ray Lewis probably. There's a board here at the Ravens Media Center that has all the predictions for the games, and I think 19 or 20 people have picked the Baltimore to win. Only one person's picked the Colts. I can tell you the star people have picked the four of us. Three of the four have picked the Colts in an upset. That sounds homer. That sounds crazy. I thought the Texans beat the Colts last week, so I figure they've earned that pick. Regardless of what happens Sunday, I'm not going to regret it. They've given us all a lot of fun and a lot of joy. And even the media, it's been so much more enjoyable to cover a team that's been inspired and played together with a lot of young guys. So I gave them the pick because I'm not sold on Baltimore's shortcomings. And I'm not sold on them as being that sound. And I will be a bit surprised if this game is close in the fourth quarter. The Colts pull it out.
Well, Phil B. Wilson, we got to let you go. Unfortunately, the clock is our worst enemy in radio. Any final thoughts that you have for us as fans here at Indianapolis, biting our nails and saying, please don't hurt our Andrew Luck. Please don't hurt our Andrew Luck. We need him for next year. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, that's the thing, folks. No matter what happens, if they lose on Sunday, it's been a great ride, and you've got a wonderful future with a team that can spend a lot of money in free agency and would bring in a lot more players next year to help Andrew and the guys. So I think regardless of what happens Sunday, Colts are going to feel optimistic about the future of this franchise.
Phil B. Wilson, Indianapolis Star, beat writer for the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts, the Ravens, it can't get any better than that tomorrow. Well, my minions, we got to take a break, and we get back. We got another beat writer just waiting to talk to us about another big story. Beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, Mr. Ed Kratz, is joining us here in just a moment right after the next break to talk to us about one Andy Reid. We'll be right back, my minions. Stay put.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Here we go again.
The best hits. Best hits.
I demand more.
And the biggest variety.
Biggest variety.
I want it, I need it, and I'm going to have it.
There's no other station like it on the planet. WROM, realmsofmusic.com. Playing tomorrow's.
Welcome back to the final half hour of today's ballots. My name's Saul Marquezel, Presidente. Well, we are going to wrap up the show here in about for the next 30 minutes, and we're going to be talking sports, everything sports that comes around the pike. And joining us is Mr. Ed Kratz of Calkins Media, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. Going to be talking with us about Black Friday, and most importantly, the biggest victim of Black Friday was Andy Reid, and I believe that we still have Gene Walker with us, as well as part of our panel discussions, and Preston Barr from out at Kansas University, the Jayhawk Nation, via Hotlanta, talking about something about the Falcons. We don't really need to get into the Falcons. I'm just kidding. The Falcons had a great season, and we could talk about that in just a moment as well. But Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, who actually has something to write about for a change this year. Just kidding. Mr. Ed Kratz, welcome back to The Balance, sir. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Happy New Year to you, Tom. Thanks.
Happy New Year to you, sir, as well. I hear your son is doing fantastic on the mat.
Yeah, well, I'm at a wrestling tournament today, and, you know, about 5-10 minutes ago, he just got a 10th win of the young year and did it by fall, and he's a 10th grader, and he's having a nice season so far, so I'm pretty proud of him. Thanks for asking.
So are you studying up on your sports law? Because we all know that high school wrestling is a prerequisite for college football, which is a prerequisite for the NFL.
Well, you're right about that. I talk to, you know, offensive and defensive linemen, you know, every day through the fall, and a lot of them wrestled at a very high level. So, you know, he does play football. He's in 10th grade. He had a pretty nice year there, too, and, you know, he's got some size to him. But, you know, look, these are long shots, these NFL players. You know, they're so few and far between to get to that level. And, you know, really, it's such a violent game as a father watching his son do it. You know, I'm not sure I want him to make his living doing that, to be honest with you.
I understand. I'm sure Mrs. Prince has a different theory as well. What we brought
right.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, she wouldn't let him play football or wrestle until he hit 7th grade. You know, he was always a bigger kid, and he always wanted to do it, and she said, no, not till your body is more developed. So you're right about that. I think she'd rather go see him sit in an office or, you know, be an engineer somewhere for NASA, maybe.
I certainly know what it's like to be a proud father, that's for sure. Well, joining us is Mr. Ed Kratz of Calkins Media, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. Obviously, the reason we brought you on is that the story nobody's really talked about too much. Andy Reid, of course, everybody's talking about Andy Reid. Everybody's talking about Andy Reid, and he's got a new collar on. It appears he's going to be a Kansas City Chiefs. Talk to us about the presser, and were there a lot of tears shed? Is this a positive thing that happened?
Well, I think it's absolutely a positive thing on both, you know, for the city's fans and for Andy himself. He never gave a press conference. Andy never stood up before the media or released any sort of statement to thank, you know, Eagles fans or you know, the organization or for anything for the 14 years he was in the city. And I'm not sure fans are – you know, I'm not sure what the fans think about that. I know that he's holding a press conference Monday in Kansas City at 1:00 to be officially introduced to one of the local sports talk radio shows here in Philadelphia. Put out on Twitter if the fans want to see or hear that press conference aired on the airwaves that day. And the overwhelming majority said, yeah, they want to hear it. So I don't know if it's, you know, when you date, you know, it's like a divorce, really. When you have a wife maybe for 14 years and you go through a divorce, do you really want to hear what that other person has to say after all this time? I think the answer is yes. I think Andy, it's going to be interesting to see what he says in his presser on Monday if he thanks Philadelphia or speaks to the fans. And, you know, I certainly know Kansas City has a terrific fan base as well. And I think he's stepping into a terrific situation in Kansas City. But I think it was something that needed to be done on both sides. I think his message got a little stale here. The last 2 years have really been sort of abysmal. He was 12-20 over that time. The Chiefs didn't care about that, obviously. They looked at Andy Reid in totality. They looked at his full resume, and they saw that his teams have been to the playoffs 9 years out of the 14 years he was in Philadelphia. He won 6 division NFC East division titles. And he went to 5 NFC championship games. I mean, he's got a glowing resume, there's no doubt. But I think over these last 2 years, his message went a little stale with the players. I think some of the decisions he made were proved not to be correct. And hopefully, and I see the sense of this when I talked to Andy a few days before the final game of the year, that I think he learned a valuable lesson in humility these last 2 seasons. And you hope that maybe he puts some of this to use down in Kansas City and turns things around. Because I like Andy. I think he's a good person. And I personally hope he does a nice job down there in Kansas City.
Well, as I do as well, obviously, you know, after 14 years, you know, maybe it is time for a change, a new face and a new change of the guards. Obviously, you're going to get that with Coach Kelly coming up, and we'll get into that conversation as well. But joining us as our part of our panel of discussion today is Mr. Gene Walker. Obviously, been a major contributor to some of the sport talk shows around the world around the nation. The United States is my world, by the way. So when I say the world, I mean the United States. But we'll go ahead and give you Europe or anything else that you want there, sir. Mr. Gene Walker, who obviously is no stranger to covering sports, and been a huge contributor to some of the best talk shows in the world, and we're just honored to have him on board with us today. Gene Walker, thoughts for Ed Kratz on the dismissal of Andy Reid in Black Monday?
Well, you know, Ed, you know this better than anybody here, how tough the Philadelphia fan base is, truly. And that goes without saying. The way McNabb had been treated when there was obviously some very visible success and on and on. Do you think that any of what you'd referred to before about how Andy might have been a little curt at the end was him sort of parting away with something that was just as bittersweet as it could ever be, that maybe the fact that he maybe had lost his love for this a while back, but it continued to run the race maybe a little too long?
Well, you know, I think if you look at Andy had a press conference with the players about a few minutes after he was dismissed on Black Monday. He met with the owner, Jeffrey Lurie, was told he wasn't going to be brought back, and then he met with the players about 10 o'clock. It's a mandatory team meeting they have every Monday during the season. And he told them that he wasn't coming back. And in talking to some of the players, I wasn't at the meeting, but they said he was very, very emotional, very choked up. They had never really seen him like that before, even after he lost his son earlier in the season. And he only spoke for about 30 seconds to a minute in front of the team before, you know, the owner kind of had to step in and let Andy catch his breath. So, you know, I wonder how he feels. He was always very complimentary of the fans, the fan base in Philadelphia, even as things went sour. And it is a tough fan base to play for. But, you know, when he did lose his son, the fans came out and supported Andy. They cheered him. They had signs along the highways in town, you know, expressing the support of Andy during that difficult period. So, you know, I'm not sure Andy is – you know, really angry at the fan base or tired of the fan base. I think Andy's an emotional man at heart, and, you know, most football coaches, I think, are. But he really wore his emotions on the sleeve toward the end there, especially in that team meeting with his players. And, you know, it makes me wonder maybe he couldn't stand up in front of the media and thank the fans because, you know, he may have just broken down. And, you know, I don't know if that's a good situation for your, you know, to see a head coach crying like that in public. You know, it's sort of like seeing a president, you know, president of the United States shedding a tear. You know, it's not always a good thing. So I think maybe that's part of it because I think he was very appreciative of the fan support. You know, even when the Eagles were struggling, they still sent a ton of fans on the road and, you know, took over some stadiums along the way, especially down in Tampa this past trip there, their last road game. I'm sorry, the second to last road game of the season. There were a ton of Eagles fans there, and the Eagles won that game, and they were rooting Andy as he went through the tunnel, and, you know, Andy shook his fist at him and was very happy at snapping an 8-game losing streak. So, you know, I think he'll always have a place in Philadelphia in his heart for the Philadelphia fans. At least I like to think that. I'm not sure he'll come out and say that, but, you know, we'll see what he says Monday if he even goes into that area of you know, thanking Eagle fans.
Well, here's the thing, and we're joined by Ed Kratz of Calkins Media, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, and I look at your article on phillyburbs.com. Eagles should go with Denver's McCoy. You're not a big fan of the chipster coming on board with the Eagles. Do explain, sir.
The chipster, huh?
That's his new nickname.
Yeah,
it originated right here with the balance, the chipster.
well, that's another reason I don't want him to be the coach here. I don't want my head coach to be called chipster. But, no, my main reason is just the red flag of him never having coached in the NFL and, you know, just not having that experience. You know, he's not going to have a roster full of 100 players. And I know he's got a bright mind, and he may be a very fine football coach in his time. You know, if he goes to Cleveland, I hear Cleveland's poised to make him a big offer, but I do know that he's meeting with Eagle officials today, and I've been told that Chip Kelly wants to make up his mind tonight as to who he's going to coach. So we may know sometime this evening or late tonight just exactly where the Chipster is headed. But the fact that he has never coached a single down in the NFL on the sideline or as an assistant. You know, he may go to Cleveland, or he may come to Philadelphia. He may not do well, but then maybe in his second stop he will, having gained that experience. I don't know. That's a big red flag for me. This whole up-tempo offense, I know he's got a mind that he can kind of tailor his philosophy around the personnel that's handed to him, but, I just question whether the Eagles even have the type of personnel to run exactly what he wants to run. So, you know, they're my two big concerns. And then putting together a staff of assistants, you know, as a head coach, you're only as good as the men you surround you with. And that was one of Andy's problems over these last couple of years is, you know, he went through a couple defensive coordinators after Jim Johnson passed away. He moved an offensive line coach and Juan Castillo over to be his defensive coordinator. Just sort of bizarre decisions. And that lack of experience in his staff, I think, hurt him as well. And with the Chipster, I question whether, you know, who he knows, what his sphere of coaching contacts are that have had NFL experience. I know his defensive coordinator at Oregon, Aliotti, was in the NFL for two seasons. So, you know, that's a good thing. But, you got to put together a staff of 15 coaches, and, you know, you hope that he would bring in people that have NFL head coaching or not head coaching, but NFL coaching experience to help guide him and to have him learn what it's like to have a roster of just 53 players, really, is what you have. And 46 of them are active on game day. This isn't college where, you can go out and recruit guys and, you know, have 50 guys sitting on the bench waiting to get in and practice, you know, especially with practice, you know. You've got to learn to practice with the guys that are starting on Sunday and, running the scout team. And it's just a whole different animal. And then again, the trend of college coaches coming into the NFL. You look back at Nick Saban, 15-17 in Miami in his 2 years there, and he was flying back to college. Steve Spurrier, when he was hired by the Redskins, horrible 12-20 record in 2 years, and he went back to college. And Bobby Petrino didn't even last a season in Atlanta. And Greg Schiano, who's currently in Tampa Bay, was 7-9 coming from Rutgers. So there's a trend there that says the college coaches are as highly sought after as they are in college, and the track record they build in college doesn't always translate into the NFL, and to me that's a concern. I just think the Eagles and any team out there would probably be better served going after someone who's been in an NFL locker room on a Sunday afternoon and knows what it's like to practice at an NFL-style tempo. They're all my concerns, and whether they're valid or not, I don't know. He could go on and have a great career, and, I hope he does. I never root for anybody to fail, so, I just hope it's not here in Philadelphia. And now Philadelphia has Bruce Arians scheduled to be interviewed next week.
Well, that ain't going to happen, brother. I want to tell you that Brian Grissom's already said he's going to do whatever it takes to keep Bruce Arians on payroll. Of course, you know, a lot of that's all hype talk. But here's the thing. What I would tell you, Mr. Ed Kratz, is I would be practicing these headlines with your editor. The Chipster gets the job, or Philly has a new chip on their shoulder. Chip on the block. New chip
yeah,
on
right.
the block. Hey, yeah. Hey, the Chipper's in town. You've heard of the do it. You heard of do it for the Gipper. Do it for the Chipper. The headlines are about to be bursting at the seam. You know, we got our redheaded stepchild with us, Mr. Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk. Kenny, I know your son is out there in Kansas, obviously a Jayhawk Nation kid. I don't know what happens when we lose these college kids, like, after the first hour, Ed. I think it's like they fall asleep on us. I don't know. But and Kenny, I know you kind of feel like after we finish up our racing segment that we don't really think that you really have much to contribute, but that's not true. So, Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk, thank you for just hanging out here with us, and we're back to you now. So, any questions that you have for Ed regarding Andy Reid and the dismissal of Andy Reid, or Black Monday for that matter?
A couple. I think that Andy Reid probably is going to succeed wherever he lands. the collective group of talent that they have in Philadelphia is probably a very tough group to coach and get cohesive and get them pulling the rope the same direction. They've been called the Dream Team championship block for a couple of years, and just nothing's really come to fruition out there. My question is, other than the names you just mentioned, is there any other names on Philadelphia's head coach list that people would be interested in hearing about?
Well, yeah, there's a few. They've already interviewed Mike Nolan and Keith Armstrong, two Falcons assistants. Mike Nolan is the defensive coordinator. Keith Armstrong coaches the special teams. You know, Mike Nolan used to be a head coach, didn't do very well, you know, in his stint in San Francisco. So I don't think they're two names that will get the job now. They did talk to Bill O'Brien, interestingly, from Penn State, and then hours later O'Brien decided he was going to stay at Penn State, and you wonder if the reason is because he was doing $18 million buyout. And certainly that's a lot of money to pay for, you know, Vince Lombardi, let alone Bill O'Brien. So I don't think anybody was going to pay that. But, you know, Bruce Arians, I mentioned, I know they're going to, you know, Ryan Grigson's going to do what it takes to keep him there. Ryan Grigson came from Philadelphia. But I think Bruce Arians wants to be a head coach. And if he gets that opportunity, I don't know if there's anything that Ryan can do to keep him in Indianapolis. And, you know, I think, you know, he's 60 years old. He's only a year younger than the Philadelphia Eagles owner, Jeffrey Lurie. I don't know if that would be an issue, but. You know, I like Bruce Arians. He's worked with Ben Roethlisberger. He did a great job with Andrew Luck this year. And, you know, I know I said I like Mike McCoy, the Broncos offensive coordinator, but, you know, I like Bruce Arians too. But also this week on the Eagles' radar is the defensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks, Gus Bradley, whose defense has improved each of the 4 years that he has been coordinating that defense. This year the Seahawks are number one, I believe, in points allowed, and number four in total defense. But his first couple years, they were in the 20s in those numbers. So he's really made strides with that defense and has put himself at least on the Eagles' radar. I don't know if anyone else is interested in him, but he is somebody that is definitely confirmed to be interviewed next week. That's provided the Chipster doesn't say tonight that he's going to be the head coach of the Eagles. But other names that could come out there, Kenny, are Greg Roman, the 49ers offensive coordinator, as well as the defensive coordinator for the 49ers, Vic Fangio. There are two other names that might be out there. And then another college name, possibly, is Doug Marrone, the Syracuse head coach who coordinated the offense in New Orleans with Drew Brees for, you know, through the early O's, 2004, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then he went to Syracuse. His record at Syracuse is only 25-25 in those 4 years he's been there. But, you know, he's a guy that a lot of people like. They think he's an innovative offensive mind. And he does have something that the Chipster doesn't, and that is he has been in an NFL locker room and in an NFL sideline when he was in New Orleans. So there are a few names there for you. And, you know, I don't know. When they hired Andy Reid 14 years ago, Andy Reid wasn't on anybody's radar. And when they hired him, everybody's like, who? What? Andy, who? A quarterback's coach from where? So, you know, it could be that guy. It could be the surprise guy that nobody's talking about.
Well, we're certainly hoping that we don't see the editorial cartoon plastered across Facebook and various different social media outlets where this eagle's flying into the chipper and on the end other end of it is feathers going everywhere.
Oh, yeah. That's after 3 years of 5-11 records, you know.
Well, Gene Walker, obviously, Gene, we appreciate you joining us today as well. Great sports contributor, and certainly we're honored to have you on board with us today. We're going to give you the final question to Ed Kratz regarding the Philadelphia Eagles or Black Monday or anything that you'd like to talk about.
Well, just a couple quick things. What do you sense, Ed, is the pick the fans would like? If they had their choice, of Lovey and all the different coaches that are out there? And two, do you find it ironic that Andy is ending up in the same place Dick Vermeil ended up after leaving Philly?
Yeah, it's good questions there. As far as the fan base, who they'd like to be the coach, I know that they were really hepped up on Chip Kelly heading into the Fiesta Bowl Thursday night. I don't really see any reason why they would have changed their mind. But I do know there's a faction of fans that don't want Chip Kelly because they have the same concerns that I do. But I think the overwhelming majority want a big splash name. I think they'd love to have John Gruden, but John Gruden's not going to come here. Or Bill Cowher, again, Cowher's not coming. And, you know, Chip Kelly's the big name, the hot name of the moment. And, you know, I think some Eagles fans would really love to have him be the next coach. I'm not sure Bruce Arians gets a whole lot of people excited, or Mike McCoy for that matter. But Chip Kelly is the hot name, and I think that's who the Eagles would like to hire, or rather Eagles fans would like to hire. As far as Reed going to the same place that Vermeil went to in Kansas City, it's kind of weird how that works, you know. I don't think Vermeil had a lot of success in Kansas City when he went there. It wasn't until he got to St. Louis when he won the Super Bowl with the Rams. But, I think Andy is stepping into a situation where he's got the number one pick in the draft, sort of similar to when he arrived in Philadelphia 14 years ago when he took Donovan McNabb as the number two pick overall. And it would not surprise me if he looks at someone like a Geno Smith out of West Virginia as being that number one quarterback to maybe develop and then maybe bring in sort of a veteran to maybe kind of start a few games until he feels whoever he picks number one with that, you know, as a quarterback, Geno Smith. And I've also heard rumors that Aaron Murray out of the University of Georgia is a junior, has not declared for the draft, but, you know, I think there might be a situation where maybe some of Andy's people reaches out to some of Murray's people and says, if Aaron comes out, we're going to take him number one. And, I haven't seen much of him play, but everybody seems to think Aaron Murray is a very solid quarterback who can be a good NFL quarterback. So it's a very similar situation that he's stepping into in Kansas City that he stepped into here in Philly, except Kansas City has five Pro Bowl players. Kansas City, there was a lot of expectation for them to have a good team this year and perhaps win that AFC West, and of course they didn't. So there is talent around him, and I think there's more talent there in Kansas City than when he arrived here in Philadelphia. So unlike Vermeil, who I don't think had a lot of success when he went to KC, I think Reed will have success. He's a good coach. He's a good person. He knows how to build. People like working for him, and he's got the number one pick in the draft and some talent around him. So I think Kansas City is going to be on the radar real fast as far as his playoffs go.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to have to wrap it up, but it does bring us to a very important part of the show. Rock into the jungle. That means that everybody gets a 30-second rant in the jungle. We're going to go ahead and start with you, Gene. Wrap it up with a 30-second rant in the jungle.
I wonder where Lovie Smith is going to go now. I have to think that he's going to go to San Diego for much the same reasons the McCaskies took him to begin with. One press conference is like every press conference. And if North Turner landed there, why wouldn't Lovie Smith land there? I think Lovie Smith goes to San Diego, whether it's the best fit or not.
All right, Mr. Kenny Barr, Radio Speed Talk, 30 seconds in the jungle, go!
Well, I'm the first somebody to my 30 seconds because I've ranted enough today. The first half hour is plenty for me.
All right, Mr. Ed Kratz, 30 seconds in the jungle, go ahead, sir.
Well, you know what I'm tired of? I'm tired of Asians putting out information to kind of push their agendas forward. This is my first time involved in a head coaching search in 14 years with Andy Reid, and you hear a lot of propaganda being spewed by agents. And my client's going here, my client's going there. A lot of it is just rumor that has no basis in fact. And, these agents have their own agenda to push their clients. And, you know, I'm getting a little sick of talking to them, to be honest with you.
All right, guys, that's it. Mr. Ed Kratz, where can people find your work and your masterpieces at, sir?
Well, I'm at phillyburbs.com, /Eagles, and you can find me on Twitter at KRACZ. I think it's at KRACZE, I believe is my Twitter. Kratz E and phillyburbs.com. Thanks, Tom.
All right, Mr. Gene Walker, where can people find your work and masterpieces at, sir?
IndianaTalks.com, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to noon. On the Eastern Time.
And Mr. Kenny Barr, where can people find your work and your masterpieces, and where can they stalk you at, my sir?
They can stalk me a couple different places. RadioSpeedTalk.com. I'm crazy enough, my phone number's even on there if somebody wanted to call me and give me the devil about something. And I'm on Twitter at KennyBarr52.
All right, guys, that's going to have to do it. We're going to let the minions go for the day, guys. Remember, Don't drink and drive. It isn't cool. We're going to catch you next week right here on the Balance Radio Network. And be sure to join us tomorrow right after the Colts game for Radio Speed Talk. Guys, that's it. Here.
Peter, you just pooped all over the bed.
When you poop in your dreams, you poop for real.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.